does beauty have to do with sports, or advanced technology, or the economy? I am Isabella Rossellini, and in each episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, I uncover stories that explain beauty's fascinating and often hidden role in modern life. Listen to This Is Not a Beauty Podcast now on your favorite podcast platform. Brought to you by L'Oréal Group.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the U.S. recently noticed something unusual in North Korea's weapons program. Its missiles started to work. That alarming development has been well documented. What hasn't is why. It's Thursday, August 24th.
What a crowd.
At his rally in Phoenix on Tuesday, President Trump defended his tough talk towards North Korea, his threat of fire and fury, and suggested it may be getting through.
And you see what's going on in North Korea. All of a sudden, I don't know, who knows? But I can tell you what I said, that's not strong enough. Some people said it was too strong, it's not strong enough. But Kim Jong-un, I respect the fact that I believe he is starting to respect us. I respect that fact very much. Respect that fact. And maybe, probably not, but maybe something positive can come about.
The following day, Wednesday, North Korea announced it was ramping up production of long-range missiles.
So just in this hour of happening now, North Korean state media releasing new images showing Kim Jong-un inspecting what may be new missiles.
The report of Kim's visit to a chemical material institute came after U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson appeared to make a peace overture to Pyongyang, welcoming what he called the restraint it had shown recently in terms of military actions.
Bill Broad, can you describe the advances in North Korea's missile technology over the past year or so?
Well, it's been dramatic. For decades, we saw missiles blowing up right and left and spiraling out of control and crashing into the sea over and over.
The missile apparently flew for 2 to 3 seconds before it exploded, a U.S. defense official.
They had been hugely unreliable.
And may not have even made it over water.
And then suddenly, starting about a year ago, things got really good.
It all actually mean a big leap for Pyongyang's weapons.
And what specifically got really good were the engines that they were using on their missiles. That started in September of 2016 with a ground test.
Beaming with satisfaction, Kim Jong-un watches from the top of a ridge as his commanders ignite a high-powered rocket engine.
Fire and smoke, an incredible success.
What kind of engine this is, what kind of power it has, what kind of impact it would have on the overall missile development program within North Korea, we're still trying to figure that out at this point. This is just coming into the newsroom.
Then suddenly, in May of this year, lo and behold, this big new powerful engine fires a big missile.
Experts say it flew for 30 minutes before dropping into the sea between North Korea and Japan. And only
the longest range missile that North Korea had launched to date. It's called the Hwasong 12. Then all heck broke loose.
The missile launched by North Korea is more powerful and more sophisticated than anything that country has ever tested before.
In July, this same big engine powered two ICBMs, North Korea's first.
ICBM, what does that mean?
It means intercontinental ballistic missile.
Kim Jong-un claims they are now able to hit the entire United States at any time.
Now we're talking Seattle, Denver, Chicago, maybe even as far as New York and Washington, D.C.
That really got everybody's attention because heretofore, North Korea has been parading ICBMs in military parades.
An ominous sight in Kim Il-sung Square. North Korea's growing missile arsenal on full display.
We've seen these things for so long, and people were kind of inured. You know, it's like, how much is propaganda, and are these just like wax models that they're parading around? Suddenly, they start shooting them, firing them.
Make no mistake, North Korea's launch of an ICBM is a clear and sharp military escalation.
So when we talk about North Korea's missile program, we know that the U.S. keeps an incredibly close eye on it. So did these analysts and people like you who have spent decades studying missile technology as a journalist, could you understand how they were making these leaps?
Not at first, right? These engines are unique to the North Korean program. We've never seen them before. But we get a treasure trove of information courtesy of North Korea. Every time they do one of these big tests, they turn them into propaganda videos, lots of pictures. They tell the world. So we've gotten lots and lots of images of these rockets and these engines. And that has been a huge source of information for all kinds of analysts. They look at this stuff in their microscopes and they go, Well, wait a second. That looks familiar. Mm. Where have I seen that before? And they go through their catalog of pictures of every rocket engine that's ever been made, and they go, Eureka, holy tamale, that looks exactly like the RD-250.
The RD-250, what is that?
The RD-250 and its brethren were the things that powered the big missiles that scared the bejesus out of everybody during the Cold War.
You may be in your schoolyard playing when the signal comes.
I mean, when I was a kid, it was duck and cover, right?
That signal means to stop whatever you are doing and get to the nearest safe place fast.
Everybody would go into the hallways, and we all put our hands over our heads and hope for the best because those warheads were coming.
Duck away from the windows fast. The glass may break and fly through the air and cut you.
And we were going to survive it somehow, the nuns told us. And those were all put into space courtesy of these engines. And where did that come from?
Where is it?
Well, it turns out that the RD-250 was manufactured in Ukraine at a factory called Uzmash.
Uzmash.
Uzmash. This is the Detroit of ballistic missiles. This place is enormous. You look on Google Earth, and it goes on block after block, miles of buildings, you know, scattered across this city in Ukraine. And the analysts have now traced North Korea's engine to this factory.
Is this a private defense contractor or a government defense contractor during the Cold War?
This was a state-owned facility.
Under the Red Banner.
During the Cold War, it was in the Republic of Ukraine, which is part of the USSR.
The Soviet Army is the flesh and blood of the people.
And it is glory days, right? I mean, they are churning these things out like sewing machines, one after the other, maybe 100 a year or more, ICBMs.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of money, lots of work, very prosperous times.
Right. They were giving Russia the military and missile edge it might have needed to stand toe-to-toe with the United States throughout the Cold War.
Well put. But suddenly the Cold War ends. Ukraine became an independent republic, which it did in 1991.
This world has a new country tonight. Ukraine, the White House.
But Russia still needed missiles, and they're made in Ukraine. Well, that was fine and dandy till around 2014, when Russia decided that it wanted to grab back the Crimea Peninsula.
The regional parliament was stormed yesterday by men with machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades.
Which just happened to be part of Ukraine.
Right.
Right? So there's this invasion and annexation of Crimea, and relations between Ukraine and Russia went south.
Ukraine has lost control of the seas around Crimea and its main airports.
And Russia, which had been relying on this factory in Ukraine to manufacture these giant ICBMs, which they still had in their silos, and to do replacement parts and to do maintenance and all this stuff for these very, very, very complicated pieces of equipment, they said, Russia isn't going to do business with Ukraine. So this factory suddenly loses its main customer. And people in Washington started getting worried. In 2014, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a very smart group of people, writes a very prescient report saying, guys, if these people with all this death and destruction expertise are suddenly unpaid, it's going to become a proliferation danger.
And tell me what that phrase means, proliferation.
Proliferation, that's the code word for the spread of nuclear weapons and high-powered missile mm-hmm. technology around the world.
And what was your specific fear? What would happen to these smart scientists and engineers of this company?
What the report says is that these Ukrainian missile experts would be out of work and, quote, could expose their crucial know-how to rogue regimes.
Like North Korea.
Exactly.
We'll be right back.
How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for The New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about the New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Bill, based on everything you've just explained, how might this technology have gotten from this factory in Ukraine to North Korea?
Great question. I don't know the details. I don't know if anybody in public life does. Certainly, intelligence agencies have a very good idea.
But the presumption is that that's what happened.
Yes. The thing is, there's a huge precedent for this. Right after the Cold War, starting in 1992, a big wave of Russian rocket designers left what remained of the Soviet rocket industry and went to, ta-da, North Korea. Hmm. And they brought a certain kind and style of technology. And you see that in lots of mediocre missiles that North Korea was making. Well, the big news story is that, whoa, there's a whole second wave of it that appears to be just starting, although the suspicion is that it was whole engines that were being transferred.
Hmm. So we're not just talking about smart people necessarily transferring from Ukraine to North Korea, but actual pieces of technology might have been carted from a factory.
Yes. The worry is that they've got whole engines.
Let me ask you a question that keeps occurring to me as we're talking about this. What are the rules around the world for whether you can buy missile technology, buy an engine for an intercontinental ballistic missile?
There's lots of rules and there's lots of regulations, and the bottom line is they are not well enforced. There are constant breaches in the nuclear world, in the missile world, and there's always this enormous profit motive, especially in the black market.
And so what you're suggesting is that there's a very reasonable assumption that the scientists at Uzmash, having fallen on hard times, would have incentive to work with, sell, share
they
information
would have,
with North Korea.
There are going to be various creepy characters who are going to be constantly pestering them, knocking on their door, suddenly meeting them at a bar, getting them drunk, and having the best time of their life. And next thing you know, it's out the door.
Bill, is there any evidence that North Korea has tried to do this?
Yeah, there's a very strong evidence. In fact, the United Nations wrote up a whole report about it. Mm-hmm. Back in 2011, two North Korean agents went knocking on the doors of this big derelict factory and said, oh, we would love to photograph some of your secret documents about how to make big missiles. And at that point—
That's aggressive, yeah.
That's aggressive, yeah. So what happened was a sting operation. The people at the plant cooperated with the authorities, and the two North Korean agents were arrested and sentenced to 8 years in prison.
You know, a pretty clear example of intent.
Huge.
It kind of blows my mind, Bill, that the moment we're in right now,
yep,
which is North Korea possessing the kinds of missiles and missile engines that could carry a nuclear weapon deep into the United States,
correct,
which is a terrifying new reality, that could all be potentially traced to a factory in a former Soviet republic that, if you think about it, may have fallen onto hard times in part because of American actions. Because one of the unintended consequences of the Cold War was that things fell apart all over the Soviet Union. So did we accidentally set off the dominoes that have gotten us to a point where North Korea now has a missile that could destroy us?
Right. Great question. And the evidence is absolutely clear. Of course. This is one of those dominoes that people kind of saw coming. And it's really it's a tragedy because there were visionaries out there, Sam Nunn and Lugar and this character by the name of Barack Obama, who during his Senate career put a lot of time and energy into something called cooperative threat reduction. Hmm. The U.S. government spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to keep these former Soviet Union experts in place, doing something peaceful and productive rather than selling their skills on the black market. The majority of the attention and the majority of the money in those programs went to nukes. They were the number and are the number one threat. People worry about a loose nuke showing up in a basement in New York City. It's a good thing to worry about. The second order of worry was rockets. And, well, you know, they didn't have that much money. And, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans were divided on what's more important. And do we really want to spend another $100 million on this stuff? Do we really want to put better fences, better cameras, better doors, better guards
around
these factories of our former enemies? Is that really how we want to spend our tax dollars?
It sounds like we didn't.
We didn't put in a lot. And one of the best analysts who have been studying this is a guy named Michael Elliman. Mm-hmm. He's at the International Institute for Strategic Studies, which is a London-based group which has a Washington office. He knows rockets cold. He went to this factory.
In the Ukraine.
In Ukraine as a government contractor, you know, looking at rockets, trying to help keep a lid on weapons of mass destruction. He was doing that a decade ago. And one of the points that he makes is that, hey, guys, there's not only this new danger of a powerful new technology in North Korean hands. Who else could get their hands on one of these big, powerful engines? If that's a leak, let's figure out a way to stem it.
Bill, thank you very much for your time.
Are you kidding me? Thank you.
The factory in Ukraine, Uzmash, is denying any involvement with the North Koreans. And in a statement, a senior official in the Ukrainian government said, quote, Ukraine has never supplied rocket engines or any missile technology to North Korea. He went on to blame the Russian Secret Service for spreading false allegations and said that Russia, not Ukraine, was assisting North Korea with its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Here's what else you need to know today. The Times reports that President Trump will send a memo to the Pentagon in the next few days, giving the Defense Department the authority to expel transgender people currently serving in the military. The memo also bars the Pentagon from recruiting transgender troops and cuts off payments for sexual reassignment surgery and other medical treatments for those serving. Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, will have 6 months to enforce the ban, which President Trump announced unexpectedly in a series of tweets last month. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.